Take my readings from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 15, verses 1 to 15, and this can be found on page 1022 of our Bibles. Jesus before Pilate. Very early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin made their plans. So they bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. "Are you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate. "You have said so," Jesus replied. The chief priests accused him of many things. So again Pilate asked him, "Aren't you going to answer? See how many things they are accusing you." But Jesus still made no reply, and Pilate was amazed. Now it was the custom at the festival to release a prisoner whom the people requested. A man called Barabbas was in prison with the rebels who had committed murder in the uprising. The crowd came up and asked Pilate to do for him what he usually did. "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate, knowing it was out of self-interest that the chief priests had handed Jesus over to them. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to get Pilate to release Barabbas instead. "What shall I do then with the one you call the king of the Jews?" Pilate asked them. "Crucify him," he shouted. "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. He had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Father, we are, it is humbling just to read through the events that led to Jesus dying on the cross. We live in a such a kind of surface level kind of culture that kind of shies away from things that are hard or meaningful. And so help us not to shy away from the reality of what happened. And what that means about us, but also what that means for us. And so be with us now, give us open hearts that we can deeply engage and listen to all that you have to say to us today in these words from the Bible. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. just a question as we begin. When you kind of read the news, I don't know, maybe it's some scandal or some atrocity or another bit of the world that seems to be kind of melting down or another leader. You know, the kind of things that we read in the news. When you read those things, how surprised are you? I mean, probably on one hand, it's kind of shocking whenever you read something like that. But it is also kind of, you think, yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised by this. It's not like we're used to everything in life kind of being totally fine, and then very occasionally there's these kind of awful things. In a sense, I think the reaction, certainly my reaction, and it's others as well, is kind of same old. You know, you read another atrocity somewhere, you think that's horrific. Same on. You know, you read of some awful thing that's happened in one of your friends, you know, you hear of some awful thing that's happened in your friend's life, you know, like their marriage is kind of melting down, or kids are going off the rails, or, you know, something they've been screwed over trying to buy a new house, or, you know, all the kind of things that happen in people's lives. Again, how surprised are you? I think that's awful, but again, on one level, it's just kind of same old. Do you know, I think one of the most sobering observations about the events that lead up to Jesus dying on the cross is that actually there's nothing very surprising about what happens to Jesus on one level. As you see the way that people relate, the insecurities that people have, the power grabs that people employ, all of these things, you think, yeah, I mean, say more. It's always been like that. It's still like that today. It's shocking what happened to Jesus, but maybe it's not surprising. That there are three key actors in the account we see today. So Jesus he's been betrayed by Judas. He's been led before the kind of Jewish ruling authorities. They've said that he's definitely guilty of death, but they don't have the power to give him the death sentence. So they have to figure out how they can get the Roman authorities involved. And so that's what happens here. They lead them through Pilate, who's the Roman governor, and they try to say to Pilate, look, we've got a real problem here with this troublemaker Jesus. He's pretending to be a king. This is a political threat. There's only one thing. He's got to have it. There's a kind of political move to make sure that they get what they want. So there Jesus is now in front of Pilate. It's very early on Friday morning, the Friday that we'll see him by midday hanging on the cross. First thing in the morning, let's call it 6 o'clock in the morning. He's there in front of Pilate. And there are some people there. So the first set of the chief priests, the elders, and teachers of the law. So did you see that? Chapter 15, verse 1. Very early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin made their plans. So they bound Jesus, they led him away, they handed him over to Pilate. It's interesting. It is the full force of the Jewish leadership at this point. Okay, the full Sanhedrin, it's like their parliament, it's kind of their governing body. All of them are in office. And how do they use it? So this is a powerful group, right? In terms of the kind of local Jewish context, this is the most powerful group. The high priest, okay, the Sanhedrin, this is the power. How do they use their power when it comes to Jesus? How do they exercise the control, the influence that they have? Well, can you see what they do? In verse 10, Pilate knows exactly what they're doing. He says, knowing it was out of self-interest that the chief priests had handed Jesus over to him. Okay, so we're going to see in a minute that Pilate is kind of like, you can see that Jesus is innocent. He knows the games that the Jewish leaders play. He can see through it. He knows it's because of self-interest. And that's what's going on with the Jewish authorities. It's self-interest. Right? So they've got a kind of power base. They control things around, religious practices, the things that everyone listens to them. Jesus is a threat. And that's what's going on. And you think, yeah, I mean, when have you seen that? So a powerful group exert their power to maintain control. Same old, right? Same old. And then there's Pilate. Pilate, as you read a little bit about Pilate in the history books, I mean, he's not quite as bad as some of the other Roman kind of Caesars or governors. But he's really not that great either. So in the Gospels, there's an account where he deliberately kind of mixes the blood of some Galileans who had been kind of slaughtered in as part of an uprising. He mixes it with the sacrifices of the temple. It's like a very, very provocative thing to have done. So that's the kind of guy that Pilate is. I mean, he's a pretty ruthless leader, albeit he's got to play the game because he's got to keep this group happy. And no one likes an uprising. That's just very inconvenient if you're trying to rule a province. So he knows how to play the game. He knows that Jesus is innocent. Okay, do you see verse 14? He says specifically why. You know, as the crowd say, crucify him, Pilate says, why? What crime has he committed? He knows that Jesus is innocent. Okay, he even kind of half-heartedly tries to persuade them to release Jesus. He sees the self-interest of the Jewish leaders, but, I mean, he's got his own self-interest, hasn't he? And so can you see, verse 15, wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. Right, so it's Passover. Passover is this great kind of celebration of freedom for the Jewish people. As the people of Israel were set free from slavery in Egypt, they celebrate that every year at this festival of Passover. It's all about freedom. And there's this kind of tradition around Passover where a prison can be released. And so we're going to think about this in a few minutes. But the crowds, Pilate said, what about Jesus? And the crowd said, no way. Release Barabbas. Right? So Pilate, he knows that Jesus is innocent. And yet, verse 15, wanting to satisfy the crowd. Why does he do it? He's a politician. And he does what every politician does, which is just kind of just to manage things. He doesn't care, really. Jesus is, yes, he's innocent, he's just not worth the trouble of another uprising. What would trouble you have to go to kind of squash an uprising? It's just same old, isn't it? Same old. We read about this all of the time, don't we? Politicians using their power and influence for their own ends in one way or another. Same old. Third major thing is the crowd. Okay, they get quite a lot of airtime in this passage. You see verse 11. So the chief priest stirred up the crowd to get Pilate to release Barabbas instead. And when Pilate said, what am I going to do with the king of the Jews? You see what the crowd say, verse 13, crucify him. And then they shout all the louder, crucify him. Crowds can be scary at times, as any sense of personal responsibility gets kind of swallowed up in the fact that everyone else is doing it. That's what happens here. It's like classic crowd mentality. There they are. They've allowed themselves to be influenced by their leaders. I mean, the chief priests certainly haven't helped because they've stirred up the crowd. I mean, these are the big authority figures in their world. And so when your authority figures say, look, this guy's trouble, you can see how the crowd might kind of go with that. But a crowd acts as a crowd. I mean, you guys at school know this. Right, when you're at school and you're chatting to someone who's friendly to you one-to-one, and then suddenly when they're part of the crowd, they can just say the most horrible thing. That happens at work as well. It happens with grown-ups as well. But you know, the crowd mentality, and here it is. And we just think, same old. Same old. It's all driven by self-interest. All of it. Whether it's Pilate, or the religious leaders, all the crowds, that's ultimately what it is. Here's what's going on. The powerful sacrifice the weak to benefit themselves. That's the dynamic. Twas ever thus. Same. The powerful sacrifice the weak to benefit themselves. Welcome to life. Welcome to humanity. Welcome to the world that we live in today. Putin starts a war to make a land grab. Same old. Trump strikes a deal to get Ukrainian minerals. Same old. A teenager mocks someone in class because it makes them feel better about themselves. Same old. A business skews the figures to increase profit for themselves. Same old. A tech firm willfully aims to hook vulnerable teenagers on their products to grow their user base. Same old. Okay, a husband deliberately kind of skews the truth to get one over on his wife. Same old. The powerful sacrifice the weak to benefit themselves. That's the world that we live in, isn't it? That's the world. That's how kings, that's how the powerful, that's what they do. And yet, in this account, of course, there is one person who is so jarringly different that Pilate himself is left amazed. You see that in verse 5. Let's read from verse 4. Verse 3. The chief priests accused him of many things. So again, Pilate asked him, aren't you going to answer? See how many things they're accusing you of. But Jesus still made no reply, and Pilate was amazed. Pilate was amazed. Why do you think he was amazed? Been thinking about this. Why was Pilate amazed at Jesus at that point? Why do you think he was amazed? I wonder if it was Jesus' total composure. I mean, Pilate, right, you see a lot of people in this position. This is a position where you are under as much of a threat as you ever can be as a person. You're literally facing death. It gets the biggest existential threat a person can face. Pilate has seen that again and again and again. He sees how every single person reacts in that situation, except this man. Totally composed. Maybe that's what it is. Okay, maybe it was his lack of fear. I mean, Pilate has seen fear in the eyes of the people in front of him countless times before. And he looks at Jesus, and there is no fear. Maybe it's some total lack of self-defense. Pilate knows that Jesus is innocent, and yet there he stands. He makes no defense at all. Silent. Pilate is amazed. As he saw Jesus in the midst of all of this self-interest, with Jesus, there wasn't a shred of self-interest. Okay, in a world full of same olds, here was something completely new. Someone completely new. Okay, a totally different kind of king or ruler. Did you see how this phrase, king of the Jews, has come back again and again in this passage? So verse 2, are you the king of the Jews, asked Pilate. And Jesus says, you've said so. In verse 9, what John would have released, the king of the Jews, asked Pilate. Verse 12, what shall I do then with the one you call the king of the Jews? You see, this is all about Jesus as a king. But goodness me, he's a different kind of king, isn't he? A totally different kind of person. And you know, there's this kind of ironic contrast in this passage around the question of who's really in control? Who's really in control? Okay, who looks like they're in control? I guess Pilate, I guess the religious leaders kind of get their way, I guess the crowd kind of get their way, but they look like they're in control. Who looks totally out of control? Well, I mean, I guess Jesus, right? He's the one who is banned, he's the one who's led away, he's the one who is handed over. That phrase comes three times, handed over, handed over, handed over. And yet, do you know the interesting thing? Just flick back with me. Mark chapter 10, verses 33 to 34. Three times in the run-up to Jesus' death, he made these predictions. And just spot that phrase, handed over, that comes again and again in our reading. Just spot it here in the prediction. Do you see, chapter 10, verse 33, we're going up to Jerusalem, Jesus said, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the laws. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit on him, flog him and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise. Who's really in control? Do you see, Jesus knows exactly what's happening. Okay, he's allowing himself to be handled. He's deliberately fulfilling a plan that his Father has set before the beginning of the world. He knows exactly what's going on. That's why he has such composure, no fear, total self-control. Why? Because he knows the plan. He's in control of the plan. And conversely, these other groups that look like they're in control, none of them are really in control. Okay, so the priests, they're totally controlled by their insecurities, their desire to kind of grab hold of power and control. They're controlled by that, aren't they? Pilate, I mean, he's controlled by the crowd, a kind of political insecurity. He knows that it's a tricky business managing a kind of Roman province. He's not really in control, he's doing what he can. The crowd, they're controlled by the religious leaders who just stir them up. The point is, no one in this passage really is in control. Jesus, the one who is bound, is the only one who is actually free. That's the kind of ironic contrast in this passage. Jesus, the one who is bound, is the only one who's actually free. He's the only one who is free from the utter slavery of self-interest. We cannot escape it, people. We can't escape it. This is just us. Same old, same old, same old, always looking out for myself. Jesus is the only one who is free from self-interest. And how does Jesus use this freedom, this authority, this control that he has? How does he use it? Everyone else uses their kind of perceived control to prop themselves up. The powerful sacrifice the weak for the sake of themselves. That's what happens. It's what everyone does. Jesus sacrifices himself to benefit the weak. It's the opposite. Jesus sacrifices himself to benefit the weak. And you get the most amazing picture of that with this guy Barabbas. You know, he's like a death row. He's been involved in a kind of insurrection, a murderer. He's a deeply unattractive man. Condemned, guilty, undeserving, helpless, unlikable. He's in prison, it says in verse 7. It's actually the same word. It's the word bound. When it says Jesus was bound, Barabbas also was bound. He's in prison. And yet, Barabbas is unbound. He is set free. Whilst Jesus is condemned. And do you see what Mark is doing? He's saying, look, this is the kind of king who Jesus is. Not the powerful sacrifice and moving for the sake of themselves. Here is Jesus sacrificing himself for the sake of the weak, the condemned, the undeserving, the unlikely. Mark invites us to say, I was with Barabbas too. I was condemned by my sin, my rejection of God. I was pretty unlovable. I was helpless. I couldn't do anything about it myself. That was me too. And yet in the same way that Jesus was condemned so that Barabbas could get free, Jesus was condemned so that I can go. In a whole world of same olds, here is something completely different. Jesus shows us the very heart of God himself, a fountain of self-giving love. And it's worth saying that what Jesus does here, this is not just like a tweak to the normal course of things. It's not like Jesus just does a slightly better job than everyone else at like navigating life. It's not just a small tweak. Okay, what Jesus does here is a revolution to how life has always run. It's a revolution. Okay, because the powerful always sacrifice the weak for the sake of themselves. That's always what has happened. And yet Jesus, it's a revolution, literally does the opposite. As our King, as the God who steps down into our world to show us his own heart. Tom Holland, who's the historian who does the podcast, The Rest is History, if you listen to that one. He's one of the kind of major preeminent British historians, you know, at the moment. He's a kind of world leader in his field. He wrote a very influential book recently called The Mint, where he's essentially making the case that Jesus has fundamentally shaped the Western world that we know and that we experience. And this is what he says. He says, Christianity is the most enduring and transformative revolution in history. Okay, and his book, it's a long book, but basically the conclusion is that lots of the things that we totally take for granted, like equality, or things that we think are important, equality, compassion, service, human rights, they wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Jesus and his revolution. Because what is life? Life is the powerful sacrificing the weak for the sake of themselves. That is life. No one has ever challenged that basic setup until Jesus came. No one had done it beforehand. It wasn't like, oh, let's just think about a better way of living. No one ever thought to do that until Jesus came. And he didn't just teach it. He showed, through his death on the cross, this revolution. Tom Holland's right. Christianity is the most enduring and transformative revolution in history. And it's worth saying, by the way, that without Jesus, we people inevitably revert to the powerful sacrificing the weak to benefit themselves. If you knock Jesus away, okay, from the revolution that has led to these wonderful things that we take for granted in the Western world, if you knock Jesus out and try and kind of hold on to these values, it ain't going to work. Eventually, normality will reassert itself, and we will increasingly see the powerful sacrificing the weak for the sake of themselves. And just look around at the world, maybe look at the Western world. Do you see how power is becoming the thing that runs the world? And how actually when the teaching of Jesus, when the life of Jesus, when the cross of Jesus was embedded in our culture, for a good season of time, it really was love that was the basis on which our country, the Western world, was built. That is changing as power begins to take its place once again. Just think of the Assisted Dying that's still in this kind of reading's apartment. You think it's about compassion? Of course it's not about compassion. Do you know how much money the NHS will save if this bill gets through? Do you know how expensive good palliative care is as compared to assisted dying? What do you think is really going on here? If this is the powerful sacrificing the weak to benefit themselves, same old. That's what happens when you just knock away the foundation of the revolution that Jesus has built. I mean, Jesus is amazing. He is amazing to do that for us. And what he has done is not just spearhead a social revolution, but he invites us to be part of a personal revolution as well. Because the question that we have as we look at Pilate, the religious leaders, the crowd, and then Jesus, the question we have is, which kingdom do you want to be a part of? Do you want to just be part of the same old? And maybe some of you here feel like that. Your life has been wrapped up in just the same old. And you're saying, no, I want to step away from that now. I want to step into this kingdom of Jesus. You know, where Jesus sacrifices himself for the sake of the weak. I want to be part of that. Fed up with the same old. Well, Jesus says, you're welcome. Be part of my kingdom. It's a kingdom not of self-serving power, but of self-giving love. That's the invitation. He says, you're welcome. Come and join. But you know that this kingdom, this king, Jesus, he fundamentally shapes us. As well. So earlier in Mark chapter 10, listen to what he said. He said, You know that those regarded as rulers of the Gentiles, the Lord is over them, and their high officials exercise authority, the powerful sacrificing of you. Not so with me. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. And as he stands before Pilate, and as all the powerful ones lay Jesus down on the altar of their own self-interest, that's not what's really happening. Instead, Jesus, the eternal Son of God, totally controlled, lays down his life in an act of service from which we receive the benefit eternally. And he says, if you are part of my kingdom, the way is, this is the way. The cross is the way of your life as well. The way of service. And some of us have just got caught up in the same old. And actually, we are using some of your powerful positions, and you are using your power to benefit yourself. And Jesus says, no, that's not the way. Now it's time for you to lay down the sake of those around. And for those of you who think, yeah, Jesus' way of life is so attractive, I want to be part of that. But we need to realize you cannot adopt the ethic of Jesus without first receiving the forgiveness, restoration, and new life. You can't just say, I'm just going to try hard to be a bit more like Jesus. That won't work. Okay, but we need a personal revolution that Jesus can bring to be part of this new kind of kingdom. Okay, you can't live out the values of this kingdom without crowning him as your king. Okay, you can't step into his freedom unless you acknowledge that he had to be bound, led away, crucified. You can't step into his brand new until you recognize that you too have been part of the same old. So I want to take away from that and step into this wonderful kingdom, following this wonderful new kingdom. Isn't Jesus wonderful? Why don't we spend a few moments reflecting on that? And in a few moments when we share communion together, what a wonderful opportunity for us to remember that Jesus sacrificed himself to benefit you. And he turned the world into heaven for us, as you did that. We'll come into the bar profession and then take a brief.